Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Hi, welcome to episode 5 of TEFL Commute. In this episode, we're trying a slightly different format. There are 4 of us in 3 different time zones sitting around a virtual table, talking about a film we've been watching recently. To find out more, listen on.
You're listening to the TEFL Commute podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to TEFL Commute, a podcast for language teachers that is not about language teaching, but the topic will probably come up. Today is a special episode. We're having a virtual roundtable discussion between 4 members who have appeared on the TEFL Commute, and we're going to be talking about a film. The Dead Poets Society, or in fact, I think it's just Dead Poets Society. A film, a 1989 film starring Robin Williams as an English teacher that may or may not have influenced a whole generation of people who went on to become English teachers. We're going to be talking about how well that film holds up. We all have seen it in the past week. But let's see who's with me here around the virtual table. Can each of you just say your name?
Hi, I'm Sean, and I see we've gone back to the long intro, Lindsay.
Yes. Who else is here?
Hi, I'm James. I'm based in Costa Rica, and I'm the guy who's normally behind the scenes twiddling the knobs.
Hi, I'm Kerry. I'm the one who interrupts people. I'm sitting at my kitchen table in Cadiz.
Right. Okay. So today, what we had decided to do is all 4 of us had decided to watch or rewatch Dead Poets Society. And then we're going to talk about it in true podcast fashion during the show and how it relates to English language teaching. I'd like to start, though, by asking Kerry, who actually was already teaching English when she saw this movie when it came out 26 years ago. Kerry, how did it feel seeing it again? After all this time, or what do you remember the first time?
Okay, right. So the first time I saw it, I was teaching in Italy, and the second time, 26 years later, really different because I noticed that I was watching it with a parent's point of view rather than kind of a very young teacher's point of view. So that really kind of skewed the way I was seeing the whole drama of it, I think.
Right, okay. And we also have here someone who's seeing the film for the first time in 2015. That's James. James had never seen Dead Poets Society before, and so only saw it for the first time just last week. James, for a film made in 1989 that you saw in 2015, your verdict?
It was okay. I mean, I'm a big film fan, but for some reason, I'd never seen it. And what I thought was most interesting was the fact that it seemed so familiar, even though I'd never seen it before. And I think it's because of the famous quotes and scenes which have sort of become part of popular culture. So it was very interesting just hearing those things like Captain, Oh Captain, and Seize the Day, and all that stuff.
Did you think it was only okay because so many teachers have talked about it? And it was kind of didn't live up to today's expectations.
Well, it's a bit cheesy, isn't it? Let's be honest.
I mean, yeah.
It's a very heartwarming story for most of it, not all of it. But it's, I did feel a bit as a teacher sort of looking at it and going, well, that's what you expect us all to be like. I'm not sure that was in my training, to be honest.
Well, let's just go back, and just in case there are listeners who have never had the pleasure of seeing this movie, it's the story of John Keating, an English teacher played by Robin Williams, who actually died just a year ago. So it's 26 years after Dead Poets Society and 1 year after he died. Anyway, John Keating, who's working at, like, is it a... It's a boarding school, right? Is it a boarding school?
I presume so, yeah.
Yeah. He's working at a boarding school, a very traditional boarding school, and he has sort of untraditional methods. And he's the English teacher and encouraging and inspiring his students to discover a love of poetry and seize the day. So, Sean, what were your views on seeing it a second time? Or and a third time, actually. You watched it three times.
Yeah, it didn't change my opinion very much. I'm in the James camp. I think the first time I saw it, it was a bit like I was stirred, especially by the ending. But now I just like it's, oh gosh. I actually found it quite annoying as a teacher as well. I think you say he was a non-traditional teaching methods, but I was thinking, well, actually, he's responsible for all this mess because of his actions. But
indeed, coming back to. Actually, we should say here that we're going to be giving spoilers. So if you haven't seen the film, there will be, because Sean just kind of touched on the ending. I think that we're going to have to give a spoiler alert here. Is that everyone okay with that?
Spoiler alert, the film ends in a mess. Coming
up. Okay, so here's my question is, let's talk a little bit about the teaching, right? Does it hold up? James says no. Sean says it annoys him. Carrie, what do we see of the teaching? What did you think?
Okay, so I think that seeing it the very first time when I'd only been teaching for a couple of years, and my background comes from being trained as a literature teacher, in fact, not a language teacher. So I think I was less critical of it. And now he just seems so incredibly self-absorbed, very teacher-centered, in fact, and all of this kind of charismatic, creative leader. He doesn't actually get the kids to do anything that he hasn't told them to do. There's that scene where he gets them to stand up on the table and see things from a new point of view, but then he doesn't get them to explore their own points of view. They all have to see everything from his new point of view. So I think as a kind of an ELT teacher, then it's like, ooh, hold on, what about the students? They're not doing anything.
I stand upon my desk to remind myself that we must constantly look at things in a different way. Break out. Don't just walk off the edge like lemmings. Look around you. There you go, Mr. Christie. Thank you. Yes. Dare to strike out and find new ground. Now, in addition to your essays, I would like you to compose a poem of your own, an original work.
It's interesting you picked that bit, because immediately after that he goes, and for homework, write a poem. And you're just like, well, yeah. Hang on a minute. You've just told them to stand on a desk, and now you're saying, go write a poem. How do these relate?
But also, isn't that the most difficult thing in the world? You know, yeah, just go home, write a poem. You know, we've learnt to scaffold and support creativity, you know, so he isn't a great example.
Oh, I was thinking, maybe give them like the, you know, give them an acrostic poem, or give them the beginning of the beginning of the sentences, which they have to finish, you know, give them some kind of support to be able to write that poem, you know, not just write a poem.
Yeah, exactly. I also thought there was another interesting thing at the, about him being a bit teacher-centered, is there's a scene where he asks them all to go outside and they have to walk around, right?
You notice everyone started off with their own stride, their own pace. Mr. Pitts, taking his time. He knew he'll get there one day. Mr. Cameron, you can see him thinking, is this right? It might be right, it might be right. I know that. Maybe not, I don't know. Mr. Overstreet, driven by a deeper force. Yes. We know that, all right. Now, I didn't bring them up here to ridicule them. I brought them up here to illustrate the point of conformity, the difficulty in maintaining your own beliefs in the face of others.
And they're all kind of walking around, and then they suddenly start walking in line, right? And he says, there it is. You're all conforming. I want you to be nonconformist. Walk your own walk, right? So this is the big message a movie is kind of saying, you know, discover your own voice, walk your own walk. And yet that classic scene, the final scene where the Ethan Hawke character stands up on the table and says, oh, captain, my captain. Isn't that an exercise in conformity? Because he does it and nobody else is doing it. And then all of a sudden, the others kind of nervously begin to get up on the chairs and say, oh, captain, my captain. And I kind of think, wouldn't he be a bit sort of worried by that? Sort of, sure, it's for a good cause, but you're all conforming now to the rebel of Ethan Hawke. So,
but and also, they're conforming to him, aren't they? They're conforming to the example that he... And why did he go back in? Precisely because he wanted to have some
because
kind
Hollywood
of...
Hollywood needed the ending.
There, yeah, okay. Hollywood, yeah, absolutely. But the character as well did, didn't he? You know, so he wasn't going to just quietly leave. He was going to go in there for the finale.
Oh, Captain, my Captain.
I do. I actually like the walking around the outside, when they're walking around outside. I quite like that as a scene. And I do think it has a lot of... I saw that as kind of a lot of relevance with what we try and instill today in teaching about thinking for yourself and being critical thinkers. And I quite liked it as an illustration of that. I see Lindsay's point, but I think in the positive column as a teacher, I quite like the fact that he was, you know, making them visualize thinking for themselves in a little way.
And I liked the Dalton, it was Dalton, wasn't it? It's responsive. He was exercising his right not to walk. Which is kind of, I don't know, I think I find the second time around the characters of the boys much more interesting than the teacher himself as well, and kind of the various different reactions.
Yeah, I made a couple of notes about methods that I noticed, not relating to ELT methods, but just things that I did, and just want to throw them out and see what you guys think here. So, for example, I've got method. I stand on my desk to constantly remind myself we must look at things in a different way. So I suppose that's sort of methodologically trying to always get students to look at things in a different way. What about the other one where he's getting them to read a line of poetry outside while they kick a football and while listening to classical music?
Come on, Meeks, listen to the music! To dance, clap hands, exalt, shout, skip, roll on, float, on, yes!
Mistopedia, isn't it?
Is that Mr. Keating is doing a suggestopedia, or is it a total physical response?
Kind of a lot of that. I mean, there's a lot of method during the film. I mean, we were talking earlier, Lindsay, about the ripping the pages out of the book being kind of eschewing course books, and then there's dogma. So,
is John Keating responsible for dogma? Is that scene? There's that famous scene because he sort of starts shouting, like he yells at them to do it as well. He says, "Rip it out! Rip it out!"
Yeah, we'll get onto his yelling later, maybe, because that's something that really irks me in the film.
Yeah.
James, any other comments from you?
Well, I did notice that at the beginning, before he arrived, when they showed an example of the teaching, and you saw that one of the English teachers was actually doing some drilling, I thought.
Oh yeah, it's the Latin teacher at the beginning, isn't it?
Yes. Latin teacher.
And I was like, well, okay, it's a bit dull, but you know, that could have been, that's not the worst activity in the world.
Agricolis. So what you're saying, James, is that there's kind of like the drilling from... So actually we've got behaviorism, we've got TPR, we've got dogma, So he is responsible for all ELT methodology then.
Well, there's another scene as well. There's a famous scene where he's with Ethan Hawke and he's like, it kind of creeps me out where there's a few scenes that creep me out in the film. There's that one where he's forcing him to like release the poet inside. And that's where I wonder if lots of English teachers seeing that scene wouldn't be like, no, this is not how you get someone to express themselves.
I didn't do it. I didn't write a poem.
Mr. Anderson thinks that everything inside of him is worthless and embarrassing. Isn't that right, Todd? And that's your worst fear. Now, Todd, I would like you to give us a demonstration of a barbaric yawp. Come on, you can't yawp sitting down. Let's go. Come on, up. Gotta get in yawping stance.
There's something interesting about that scene as well, though. Sorry, backtracking to the one about where he's getting the Ethan Hawke character to, you know, spit out his poetry. In an interview after Robin Williams died, Ethan Hawke said that particular scene is one that he remembers as being the first time when he had to really act, and that he got a real high out of it, that he really enjoyed the energy in that scene, kind of the conflict, I guess. So it's quite interesting from a completely different point of view that for, as a teacher or as a parent, you're thinking, good God, no, you can't treat the poor boy like that. You know, he's an obvious introvert. You can't just get him to shout out in front of the class.
Yeah, but the whole thing about that is that stems from him not having done his homework. So not having done his homework, the teacher turned on him. So to humiliate him, he makes him stand up in front of the class. I mean, it's kind of a list of no's when we're looking at it from an ELT kind of, if we're training teachers, if they did that in their training courses, we'd be like, no, stop.
But I think also kind of not in his defense, but kind of I interpret it differently, that he's he knows that Todd's been spending hours and hours trying to write the poetry, and that he has written something, but he's not going to stand up and read it out loud, and he just wants to unblock him, and I think he's doing it rather than to humiliate him. He thinks he's trying to.
I see that point. It's kind of, I think if I look at the difference from when I watched it back then and now as a trained teacher, it's kind of like, oh no, that's not what we're supposed to do. But I do agree that it was trying to help him in that sense.
I think we should put the film also in the context to which it's intended. I was trying to figure out what year the film is supposed to be set in, and I could figure it out from the cars. So I'm the cars look kind of like 50s or 60s. Does it say?
1959. It's 1959. From my research, yeah. It's set in 1959.
Good research.
So it's 1959. I mean, there's a couple of things that really kind of give it away. The cars. There was also the kind of what I thought was very funny. I don't know if you've noticed just how seeing how a film holds up is the casual approach to smoking everywhere and how just waving your hand a little bit around will get rid of the smell of smoke. So they're all smoking a cigarette. The teacher comes in. They like throw the cigarettes on the ground, wave their hand a little bit, and all of a sudden, like no one is supposed to notice. You could have smoked a cigarette, like these days you could smoke a cigarette and sort of 48 hours later someone would walk into the room and say, someone has smoked in here. So
it's because everyone else is smoking as well, I guess. Like, you know, all the male characters. Is it an all-male film, in fact? No, it isn't. There are a couple of girls, aren't there?
No, I made a list. I made a list and women are not really well represented here.
There's the two girls that come to the Dead Poets Society. Yeah, there's the party and
a love interest.
The love interest, which is kind of very inappropriate behavior brought on by the teacher saying carpe diem.
Yes, there is
that works though.
There's that scene. Well, first of all, there are the two girls who kind of crash the Dead Poets Society, so they're not really sympathetic characters, and they're really one-dimensional. There's no kind of thoughts. There's the mother of Neil, who's cowed by her husband. She's very one-dimensional.
She's a real doormat. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's no real strong women at all in this, and they hardly have any lines. And then there's the love interest, and there's that really creepy scene at the party. Did you remember that? Where he's sitting there, and everyone's drunk, and people are kissing, and he's sitting on the couch, and she's fallen asleep on his lap, and everyone's around. And then he suddenly goes, carpe diem, and he starts leaning down. And I was thinking, what is this? What's going on here? Like,
it's a court case waiting to happen.
I know it was. Did anyone else find that really creepy?
But that's what I say about going back to the mess at the end. All those things that unravel are all due to him going carpe diem at the beginning of the film.
But you can't give it. It's not all his responsibility. Come on, the father has got like a huge responsibility in the, you know, the final mess. He's the one with the firearm in his desk, you know. He's the one who's and he's the one who's goading his son. Keating has absolutely no way. He doesn't read people very well, does he? He doesn't realize that he's not going to go face up to his father and tell him what he's doing. But I don't think Keating is Keating's fault. It's more the whole kind of the society that they're living in, the expectations from the parents, all those kind of things.
Carpe diem. Seize the day, boys.
Can I ask, did anyone really buy that ending? Because it seemed to me like the kid, you know, he was a bit sad, right? Yeah. And then the next thing, whoa, hold on a minute. You know, I don't want to underestimate, you know, teen issues, but it just seemed to me a bit Like, I don't think they put enough work into justifying that final action.
It did seem that he was kind of being bullied by his father. We established that from the beginning.
I mean, yeah, he's picked on right at the beginning because he was writing, he's editor of the newspaper, isn't he? And his father tells him to stop.
But I suppose if that movie was made today, they'd probably give much more reason for him to actually kill himself. Because you're right, he does kind of, it's kind of like... Hey,
that's actually the first time we've said kill himself. We've used mess at the end of the film all the way through.
There was a spoiler.
Yeah, Neil bullied by his father and not allowed to finish doing a series of plays or go back to the school, shoots himself with the gun that his father keeps in his desk. Yes, I don't buy it either, actually, James. I think you're right.
Especially after he had just had the most amazing experience of being on stage and feeling that feeling of, wow, I really did this. And
so now I'm going to go kill
myself. I don't know. I just thought.
Yeah, you just run away.
Yeah. What did we think of Robin Williams? Is this one of, it's one of his classic roles. I remember it being one of the first roles where he wasn't playing up for the laughs so much. You get some of it still, but he was like, doing another side, the gentle Robin Williams side. It was like the first one that he then did again in Good Will Hunting and in other movies. What did you all think of Robin Williams in this?
Well, I always really liked Robin Williams as a comedian. I mean, if you watch some of his early stand-up, it's just phenomenal. It's like every single type of stand-up in an hour. You know, he does everything. And I think he's one of the greatest stand-ups ever. As an actor, I think sometimes he was prone to mawkishness a bit, which I think this film probably falls within. But most of my criticisms of it wouldn't really be of him. They would be more of the script. So I think he did a really good job. I think that's what the script and the film demanded of him, and he did it really well. I think the same goes for Good Will Hunting as well.
Yeah, I often thought that Good Will Hunting was almost like it was could have been the same character, John Keating again, but much later now and teaching math, I suppose. It almost seemed like the same kind of character.
It seems like a very archetypal Robin Williams character, even though maybe there's only those two examples, but maybe it's because those are the clips that we see over and over, or we saw over and over a year ago, being, you know, sort of remembering Robin Williams, so it's kind of hung as this, you know, that was his role, his, you know, almost typecast into that, even if it was only twice.
That's true. Yeah,
I prefer to think of himself as a kind of insane comedian, you know, insane in the best sense, of completely unhinged comedian. I think that was him at his best.
And so fast and witty and intelligent in those interviews as well, that, you know, sort of just where he's harassing people almost, isn't he? Kind of intellectually harassing people.
Yeah. I think you can imagine watching them, you think half the people watching this probably find this incredibly irritating and half the people watching it think it's amazing. And not if you're doing that, you're normally doing something right.
Yeah.
I think I'd probably have a better answer to the question if you'd asked me in 1989. I think I've watched it now too much, kind of knowing I was watching it for this in an almost analytical way, and I've become annoyed at the character as a teacher. So I think that kind of washes on what I think of the role.
Oh, Captain, my Captain.
There was one interesting thing that when I was watching it, kind of on the same day, there was a news story in the social media about this teacher in the States who had been sacked after I don't know how many years, and he'd won excellent teacher awards and stuff for reading a Ginsberg poem with his students who were about the same age, and one of the students had brought it into class and wanted to share it, and the teacher had said, yeah, fine, why not? And he got fired straight away. And so it's kind of like the film was set in 59, but actually maybe the actual education system in the States is still right there. You know, there are so many. And then I started looking at how many poems are actually banned in the classroom in the States. It was quite interesting as a kind of a backdrop to it.
A banned for reasons of what kind of reasons?
The poem is about homosexuality, basically, about homosexual love. And these were 17, 18-year-olds doing their advanced English. I can't remember exactly what the course is called, but it was obviously just as they were coming to the end. and they were all heading off to college, and they were doing this extra course, and he was supposed to be this amazing, you know, super teacher or whatever. But slightly in that vein, maybe, of the inspirational teacher, I don't know.
Is this battle against kind of tradition not ongoing anyway? I mean, that's what the film is, isn't it? The non-conformity teacher against the traditions of the school or society. And I've always felt in the places I've worked, there is this kind of, this approach that we take in the language schools doesn't sit well with parents and people outside of the school because they're coming from a completely different educational point of view. And I kind of saw that in the film a little bit. I don't know what you think.
I agree. I was going to think there's even recently when I was teaching a class in a local high school, the headmaster came in to see what was going on because we were making quite a lot of noise talking. And I was crouched down next to one of the students, so he couldn't see me. So he came in to tell the class off for making so much noise. And then he kind of noticed that I was there in the corner, crouched, and then just kind of apologized and left again. But he obviously wasn't, he didn't approve that much of what we were doing in the class. So yeah, that definitely is a context that I think a lot of us are working in.
Interesting then. I'd like to throw something to all of you here. Do you think that this is, I'd have to say, you know, I would think that coming out of Hollywood, this is one of the, Dead Poets Society is the archetypal modern teacher film, right? Isn't there, like, there are several others that are like this. Did anyone do any research on it? I mean, for example, Mona Lisa Smile was another one. I think kind of Coach Carter. You could even argue that Whiplash is another kind of teacher movie with a teacher, you know, pushing a music student, you know, right to the edge kind of thing, but in a meaner way. Why do you think this is considered? Do you think it's part of that reason that because it's reflecting a struggle between conformity and nonconformity? Is that what makes it an archetypal movie?
Yeah, actually, I think it goes back further than that. I don't think this is the first.
I don't think it's the first, but I think it's one of the archetypes. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, because I used to do a movie club with some students of mine, and I used to they were all English teachers, so I used to show them films about teachers, and I had a policy which was I'm never going to show Dead Poets Society because I know you've already seen it, and so I used to show them I've forgotten the name of the film. Goodbye, Mr. Chips. Right, the original Goodbye, yeah. Mr. Chips, which came out, I don't know when, but a long time ago.
It's black and white.
I don't know if there's... Yeah, it's probably the 40s, I think. And maybe even the late 30s. And that's the classic story of a teacher going in and changing everything.
1939.
And shaking everything up.
I just found that.
1939, there you go.
Okay.
So I think it's one of those stories that I don't know how far it goes back. If we go back before cinema... Maybe there's always been as long as there have been schools, there have been stories about teachers going in and changing people's lives, you know?
So it's a meme. It's a cultural meme.
Yeah. Dickens has the grad grind kind of caricature of education as well, doesn't he? You know, with facts, 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 that's all you need, which is a bit like the measuring of poetry at the beginning of Dead Poets.
Does that book exist, by the way? Is that a real book? Did anyone check that out? I couldn't find it.
If it does, there's Lindsay's Christmas present sorted out.
Anyway, let's before we wrap up our conversation here, we've been going for a little while. Did anyone notice any little, in the parlance, in the talk, Easter eggs in there for film nerds? For example, how actors went on to do things after that, or any other little Easter eggs in there? The one that everyone notices first, or that I notice first, is the guy playing Neil goes on to, I didn't see him in anything until I saw him in House.
And I think there's also the irony is that the future that his dad's got mapped out for him in the film is to become a doctor.
Oh, yeah, well done.
So it's like, you know, there he is, he pops up.
And according to... Wikipedia, the actor that plays his dad appears in an episode of House as well. So there's a turnaround there.
And then there's the Ethan Hawke dropped out of college in order to fill and in order to take part in the film as well. So he kind of did what Neil didn't. So he dropped out of school in order to start his acting career.
Mm. It seems that not many of that cast actually went on and did anything much.
No, that's true. By the way, I've just found a really interesting one on the internet database. This is one of, like, imagine what would have happened if. You know who was originally getting the leading role? Liam Neeson.
Oh, right.
Liam Neeson.
Your homework then, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. I'm a man with very special skills. Yeah, you would certainly do your homework. All right, okay.
When I was looking at the cast, I came up with that Lara Flynn Boyle, who, you know, from Twin Peaks, I would presume, that she was deleted from the film. That actually there was this woman character in it that was taken out. I don't know the extent of the role, but it was filmed and she was originally in the cast list, but the scene got deleted.
Well, apparently there's a real life Mr. Keating that the film's based on... I don't know if it's a short story or a novel, but that was also, it was autobiographical in that there are interviews you can find with the original guy who was supposed to be the model for Mr. Keating, who says that he never ever used any of those kinds of teaching activities in class at all and has absolutely no idea how he inspired the character.
I wonder where they came up with those activities from then. When you think about it, it's a scriptwriter going, oh, right, now I reckon we should get him to stand on the desk.
Yeah.
Or did they have educational advisors?
Yeah, they're in the story. It's just that the original teacher didn't do that. He said he had absolutely no idea he was inspirational.
I've just found other people who were slated to play John Keating. It isn't just Liam Neeson. Mm. Mel Gibson.
Yes, that was the one.
Can you imagine?
You'll never take my lamp.
And then Bill Murray as well.
Bill Murray might have worked.
Murray could have done it. I think Bill Murray. David.
Bill Murray always works.
Yeah, although I guess he might have been too sardonic in some of it.
But, yeah.
Mel Gibson, that would have been crazy. But Liam Neeson, actually, that would have made it very funny. I think they should redo a new version. They should reboot Dead Poets Society with Liam Neeson. That would be great.
There'd be more than one gun in the movie, that's for sure. So, now we've kind of analysed it, watched it again, or whatever. Do we think it is a film that should be held up, or because it is, you know, there are so many teachers I talk to who say, "Oh, Dead Poets Society is such a wonderful film," blah blah blah. Do you think we hold it in too high esteem?
I wonder if teachers aren't saying that because they saw it at a certain age. Because that's certainly my feeling, and then seeing it again, I'm not so sure. What do the others think?
Yeah, there's maybe a nostalgia kind of factor there. Don't know, possibly, yeah.
Maybe it's not Dead Poets Society that was great. Maybe it's 1989.
Come on, rip it out. Thank you, Mr. Dalton. Gentlemen, tell you what, not just tear out that page.
I was going to say, I think there are probably better films that you can use as your model of teaching, or at least kind of more interesting films to watch, even if they're not necessarily better teachers. I would prefer maybe The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie as being a particularly nutty and interesting film.
Maybe
I'd like to think of.
Maybe that's the listeners' homework, that is, that they suggest a better film that we watch for another episode.
Yeah, there's one I found that I'd like to watch that I haven't, which is a kind of a mockumentary called Chalk about new teachers having a really rough time. But it's supposed to be pretty real. At least that's the reviews it was getting. So I think my vote would go for trying to find that and seeing that.
It's interesting that a film of new teachers.
Okay, well, what we'd like to hear from our listeners is if you think there's a teaching movie that's better than Dead Poets Society, please let us know. You can let us know on Facebook, on Twitter, or on our blog at thetefilcommute.com. We'd love to hear from you. I think we'll wrap it up there, guys. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. I think people should also comment, and because we've given John Keating quite a bit of a criticism there, so it'd be interesting to see if people agree with us or not.
Someone needs to come to his defense.
Indeed. Final words, Kerry, James?
Thank you very much. It's been fun. It's great. Hope we do this again.
Yes, it's been fun to be on the other side of the microphone for once.
Ah, carpe diem, James. Carpe diem.
Carpe diem, everyone. Thank you for listening.
As your commute is coming to an end, here's something you can take into class. Use the quote you're about to hear as a dictagloss. Dictagloss is different from traditional dictation. Instead of trying to write down every word, in dictagloss, students try to reconstruct a short text by listening and noting down key words, which are then used as a basis for reconstruction. Play the clip once without letting the students write anything, then play it again. Now, let students write down as much as they can remember, comparing with a partner. Now, based on what they've remembered, students try and reconstruct the text. At the end, ask them what they have got and then compare again with the original. Follow up by asking students to discuss the quote, asking them to provide examples of poetry.
We don't read and write poetry because it's cute. We read and write poetry because we are members of the human race, and the human race is filled with passion. Medicine, law, business, engineering. These are noble pursuits and necessary to sustain life. But poetry, beauty, romance, love, these are what we stay alive for.
You can find the instructions for this activity, plus other ideas, at our website, www.tefelcommute.com. You've been listening to The TEFL Commute, an original podcast produced and presented by Lindsay Clanfield, Sean Wilden, and James Taylor. Don't miss out on any episodes by subscribing to us on iTunes and by visiting us at www.tefelcommute.com.